Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, October 9th, 2014. I'm Sam Minter, and I've got Yvonne Bo with us again this week. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, I'm back. Last week, I wound up, you know, so I go on this business trip, and I figured that, I mean, I could get back to my room in time for this. I mean, because we were in an off-site meeting somewhere. Okay, all right. I hadn't been to the place before. Okay, great. Uh-huh. I don't know. You and I lived in Pittsburgh. I don't know if you heard about this place, the Macklin Woodlands Resort. It's like south of Pittsburgh.
Never heard of it.
It's been there for a long time. Obviously, we have a friend over there that I visited in Maryland who obviously had heard about it. But, you know, I guess the people who were actually from Pittsburgh, they all knew about it. I just didn't know about it. So anyway, the thing is, very nice place. But the one thing is that I was in a room. It's by the word woodlands. There is a main building, okay, all right, that has rooms, but they also have like cottages all over the place. So okay. I wasn't staying in the main building. I was staying in one of the cottages, which was quite far away from the building. And there was Wi-Fi, but the signal was just not good. And the cell phone signal was even worse, okay? And so I was like, you know, Sam, I mean, you know what? I would love to, you know, do this, but I don't think this is going to work. You know, and then I tried to pick up one of the phones, and I guess, you know, it was a big room, and I don't know, the one phone that was in a convenient place, I picked it up, and I guess nobody had used it in a long time, and it was not working. Uh-huh. There was a phone, I had a kitchen, there was a phone somewhere there, but I'm like, really? I'm going to be standing in the freaking kitchen doing this show? I'm like, I really don't think so. So I was just like,
because of course it's one of these that's actually like wired to the wall,
right? Yeah, so. I'm like, I'm not standing in the kitchen. I'm not doing this, you know, because you could call. It was good. I mean, you know, even if you're out in those places, you could call for room service,
right?
So that was, you know, it was nice. You know, they did all that. Very nice place. Just not. Let's just say it's far away, which is good. You know, we were away and we got some stuff done. I would have liked to have accomplished more, but it's okay. We did get some headway on some things. So
yeah,
anyway,
okay, good. Yeah, I mean, they're. I don't know. There's some appeal to places that are intentionally a little bit out of range.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, this is going to segue into some of the other stuff we had to talk about. So let me just real quick say some of the topics that we were going to talk about this week. I talked a little bit about Ebola last week, but we're going to talk about it again because there have been some developments and we haven't heard Yvonne's take on Ebola yet.
Right.
I'm sure he thinks it's a wonderful thing. there's been a lot of economy stuff in the news, and that's sort of, you know, Yvonne's stuff. So we'll talk about that some. But the other topic, and the one that we were going to sort of segue into, I think, is sort of work ethic stuff and sort of the American, and it's a Western thing, but it's really also very much an American thing about sort of the importance of work. It's the old Protestant work ethic and how that applies to all sorts of things. But first, you know, Yvonne told you the story of his last week. I just want to briefly say, and you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw a couple tweets about this today, but I have been sick now for 5 days. So it started, my son got sick first. He got sick last Friday. And then by Saturday, I had gotten it and my wife was starting to get it. By Sunday, you know, Amy, my daughter, has avoided this mostly, but everybody else was sick. Like, and for the weekend was absolutely miserable. Like, I think it was Saturday. I basically slept the whole day through.
Well, that probably was nice.
It was probably, it was okay, I guess, but it wasn't the kind of, hey, I've got
it wasn't the kind of what, like, kind of day, like, oh, you just had this day that you were like off and you were,
yeah,
like,
it wasn't, right, what, no. It wasn't one of these,
you were miserable and you were like lying down.
Yes. And you know, I'm sure it was better to sleep than not sleep. And my wife was a couple days behind me on this. So she was like that on Monday. But, you know, by the time I got to Monday, you know, I was like, I got up in the morning and basically fairly quickly determined that work was not going to happen. Like, at least I wasn't going into the office. I was planning on going into the office, but then what actually turned me around, I got up and I was just feeling miserable, and I decided to, like, I would do some work from home, but I wasn't going into the office.
Okay.
And this pattern, and each day for the rest of the week, I've gotten up in the morning thinking I'm going to work. And then very quickly, it's like, yeah, no, I'm not.
No, you're not. Yep.
And I've worked from home every single one of these days, but it's been like, I'm talking and stuff now, but it's the first few days of this were like a bad head cold, like a really bad head cold. But then by like the last couple days, my head is still stuffy and that kind of stuff, but mainly I'm just completely and totally drained. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'll do the work from home stuff. I'll be answering email. I'll be doing this thing. And, like, after about 4 hours, I hit a wall. And I'm like, oh, my God, I need to lie down.
You're done. Yeah.
And, like, the whole time, like, I could do my work because primarily my work is sitting down at the computer and doing and communicating with people and stuff like that. But anytime I had to actually move, like I had to get up and stand and walk around the house or whatever, any sort of physical activity for more than 5 to 10 minutes, and I was wiped.
Like about, look, I think it was, I don't know, a couple of months ago, I was feeling like that. And I wound up like, I don't know, I got a cold. Okay, all right, that happened. And so, I mean, I remember that I started work and I felt exactly the same way as you did. And I remember this one day that I wound up, look, I just grabbed the laptop. I was sitting in my home office, but I just, because typically I like to sit there, I'm in the office, you know, close the door, I put the sign up, you know, just, you know, work. And I'm actually like, occasionally when I'm doing that, I'll post a schedule in my conference call. So sometimes my wife wants to talk to me, but I'm like, I'm trying to post a schedule. So she knows, listen, you may not hear me talking, but it's not that I'm sitting. It's like, I may be on a call. I have my headset on and she can't hear what's going on. So I just want to know, oh, okay, great. He's on a call. Okay. All right. So, but this is just one day, dude, I just grabbed the laptop. I just went into my bed and I put it there and I did some work, but I was like, after a while, it's like, it doesn't matter. Even in bed, you're like, so not feeling well. It just turn around. It's just like, oh God.
Yeah. And the whole time I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling guilty. I'm like, I should be at work. I should be doing stuff. I mean, and like, yeah, okay. And I guess I should be like, you know, God damn it, I was sick. They should be fucking glad I did 4 or 5 hours of work, you know?
You should feel that way. I don't feel guilty about it. The problem I feel like with this stuff, we were talking a little bit about this whole rat race and work ethic. It's not that. It's just that you know what? Even when you're sick, it doesn't matter. This crap just, crap just keeps coming in, you know? And so you take the time off, and then you go back, and it's like, you know what? Fuck. Look at all this shit now I gotta deal with, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's just a pain in my ass.
Yeah, well, and Alex is invading the office again, and so is the dog. Anyway. yeah, so this... Well, hold on a second here.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
The nice starting takes place. And you start taking.
No, no, I'm not really taking a long break here. I just had to pause for a second. Okay, we're back. So anyway. Anyway, what we were talking about, I just finishing up on the me being sick, and then we'll get into the work ethic stuff for real, is like, you know, I still did feel guilty about, like, you know, because also I'm planning on taking next week off to work on some personal projects, and now I'm out like half this week, and I'm, you know, but, you know, I'm freaking sick. But it's also the kind of thing where, like, if you're completely identifiably like, oh my God, I've got this particular illness with these particular bad symptoms, it feels a little bit better. And I sort of had that the first day or day and a half. But after that, it's just been like, I can't point to any one particular thing that should be knocking me on my ass. But at the same time, you know, I have no stamina. I can, you know, physical activity kills me after a few minutes, and even desk activity kills me after a few hours. And so it's like, and I keep thinking, like, you know, tomorrow, I'm like, I'm going in tomorrow, damn it. I'm going in tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going in tomorrow. We'll see how I feel in the morning, you know? Because even right now talking to you, I'm like, I feel hot, and I'm like, ah, I don't actually have a fever, but whatever. Anyway, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
And the fact that the whole family is sick doesn't make it any better, you know.
I hear you.
Oh, God.
Daddy, I don't know if Amy was sick then.
You're?
Guamaloof is part of the family, but
it
was somewhere else.
Yeah, so Alex is pointing out that my daughter was not sick and my mother was not sick.
That's very good to know.
So, anyway.
Anyway.
You're right, we don't know. So, the work ethic stuff, and obviously we started touching on it just with that, like, you know,
yeah.
I've been sick all week, and yet I feel like, I would be perfectly justified just saying, I'm sick. I'm not doing jack shit. I'm not looking at my work email. I'm not calling into conference calls. I'm sick.
It used to be, you know what? When you were sick, all right, you didn't have a laptop. Even if you worked on a computer, the computer was at the office. You didn't bring that home. You didn't have this stuff. Mm-hmm. I was talking 20 years ago.
Right.
So you were sick at home. You were sick at home. You weren't doing jack shit.
Yeah, and now it's like, I feel like this, you know, could I have gotten away with it if I just said, I'm sick, I'm out of here? Probably.
Yes.
But you feel this obligation, like you shouldn't do that.
Look, that's you. I mean, I will say, and it's not a lot you. Of no, no, no. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people, I agree. And I will say that most Americans feel that way. But when I say I'm sick, I try to go, look, I'm sick. I shut the whole thing down. I'm done. And I will do that. And I don't feel guilty about it. I mean, we spend so many hours, our off hours, other hours, just doing stuff, working. I'm just like, you know what? Damn it. You know, there's got to be a moment where you take a break. And you do this. And the problem about it is just, I mean, my only thing was what I mentioned is that sometimes when you disconnect, it's just the problem is that there's just a whole bunch of shit that backs up sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Even
after the weekend, if I disconnect for the weekend, which I usually try to do, if I disconnect for a weekend and I come in Monday, there's a backlog just from the weekend. And, you know, and it takes a while to deal with that backlog. And if I'm actually out a few days and not paying attention for real, and it'll be an experiment for me. Like, I'm actually taking next week off, and my intention is to not check my work email at all for that full week because I'll be working on other things at home. When I come back, first of all, my stupid mailbox quota is going to be full, so I'm going to have to spend all kinds of time clearing out my quota before I can even do anything.
Wait a second. You have a mailbox quota?
Yeah, they have quotas, and when they fill up, they don't stop you from getting mail, but they stop you from sending mail until you clear it out.
What the hell kind of Mickey Mouse place this is, for God's sakes? You guys got fucking mail? You guys still...
Don't even, okay? Anyway...
I don't have a mailbox quota.
You're lucky there. Alex, remember you have to be quiet to stay, or I take you away. And then there's all kinds of stuff built up, and you have to catch up, and blah, blah, blah. And it helps, you know, there have been a couple things in the news lately about, like, places in Europe trying to, you know, set up regulations or whatever to, you know, limit work email outside of work hours and things like this. And I don't think, you know, government regulation is the right way to deal with this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, the culture of this is getting a little bit crazy. It extends to other places too, like not taking vacations. I mean, you know, lots of people do take their vacations. Lots of people don't. I'm particularly bad at it. You know,
yes, you are.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. I haven't taken a real vacation in a long time. I take a day here, a day there, things like that. But lots of people let their vacation go unused.
I used to force my employees to take. I still do. I force my employees to take vacation they're not taking it. I'm like, you know, get the fuck out.
Yeah, I mean, many years ago, when I was at my last year at Merrill Lynch, before I moved on from there, my last year and a half at Merrill Lynch, I forced myself to actually take all of my vacation. And it was very nice. It was very healthy. I haven't done it since. I should start doing that again. Because taking the mental break, and it really has to be a mental break, because like somebody at my work just in the last few weeks went on their honeymoon. And was answering freaking work email from their honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And it's like, damn. No, you're not on vacation if you're still checking your work email. I'm sorry. Right. Like, even if you're just doing it occasionally, blah, 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 it is, it takes you mentally back to work. Where well, the point of you, being a vacation is not,
yeah, it's
to be away.
I got to tell you something that I did worse. I actually reprimanded a couple of employees of mine for sending freaking emails out on weekends.
Mm.
I've done that. I just recently did that actually yesterday, as a matter of fact. I told somebody it's on Friday. I mean, look, the week is long. I go Monday to Friday and we work early, work late during the week. But I told my guys, listen, Friday, it's 5:00. It's over. It can come back till Monday. Okay, and I got an email from somebody over some stupid crap on Saturday at 10:30 in the morning, and I didn't reply to them over the weekend. I did see it come in, but I fucking didn't touch it. But on Monday morning, I freaking blew up. I said, didn't I just fucking finish saying to stop working Friday at 5? Well, I had a lot of work. Or, you know what? Well, you know what? I said, well, you know what? Listen, you want to work? That's fine. I said that not to, but you know what? I don't want to see another fucking email sent to me again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so, like, I want to broaden this a little bit. Like, we said, you know, sort of the U.S. versus Europe on this. I mean, like, the Europeans take their vacations very seriously. Certain countries, instead of having a 40-hour week, have, like, shorter work weeks. There are all kinds of additional laws on, you know, everything from vacation time to maternal leave to all this kind of other stuff. So there's definitely some cultural differences going on there. But also just as a sort of one of the things I notice is, you know, coming along in all of these discussions, I mean, we're talking about the, you know, when you talk about the unemployment rate, when you talk about everything else like this, excuse me, see, sick. you know, one of the things that I keep thinking is, okay, the conversations are always around, let's get jobs for everybody. Let's get jobs for everybody. We need to make the economy and whatever. And that's all well and good. And I agree with that as sort of a means to an end, in that the end here is we want people to be able to support themselves and, you know, not be starving on the street and stuff like that. But then I think, like, where's the real ideal? Where do we really want to be? Like, if you talk 100 or 200 or 300 years in the future, where do you really want to be? Do you want a world full of people working 40 hours a week? And my answer is, you know, not really. What I want is I want the technology to develop in such a way, and we've talked about technology developing and putting people out of work, and I'm like, well, actually, yeah, that is what you want, as long as, you know, people aren't starving on the streets. Because what is the fundamental, like, hope for all of this technology and stuff? It's to free people from the drudgery of doing things that could be automated or could be done. I mean, I see my, you know, and we're talking pie in the sky here stuff that I don't anticipate happening in my lifetime. But, you know, the ideal here is that people spend their time and effort on the things that they really want to be doing and want to contribute. And so the people who love doing X, Y, Z, give them every possible opportunity to do that. But we don't need to have people who are spending, you know, 40, 60, 70 hours of week doing things they hate just to make ends meet. Like, in an ideal universe, we try to set up something so that those people can be spending their time on something that they actually enjoy, that makes sense to them, that they want to be doing. And we do it in such a way that making that choice doesn't mean they starve.
I think that there will always be responsibilities and jobs and things, no matter what technological change that we bring, that, you know, I mean, that people need to do something that is just, you know, sometimes it's just needs to be done, and it's not the most, you know, interesting thing. I mean, I just think that's the nature of life.
There will always be some things along those lines, but there are a lot of things like... Yeah, there are all kinds of things like, you know, okay, all of the stuff that we consider sort of menial work today.
No, I hear you. Know? I understand what you're saying. It's like, I mean, like the other day we were talking about, you know, looking at the, I don't know if you've seen like those new modern garbage trucks, for example, the ones that got it, because before you used to have people that used to have to get out of the truck and actually pick up the garbage cans, right? Now they got these trucks that just pull up to the side and the garbage can is there. This thing extends and picks up the thing and just dumps it in there and just... There's just a driver. I mean, eventually, the driver is like, you know, a luxury, you know, once the frickin' truck drives itself. You know? You don't even need that. Hello? Did I... Okay, apparently I'm talking about myself because Sam has had to go on duty to but I, you know, I don't know. Well, I'm going to pause here for a second and we'll wait for Sam to come back right after this.
Information. Sorry, I'm back.
Well, I placed a break.
Oh, good.
So because
when I left, you were talking about a garbage truck.
Yeah. So I went and we're back, I guess, at this point.
Yes,
and
garbage truck story, but you know,
it's a simple thing. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know if you've seen the garbage trucks. Now they got this arm and they could go and pick up the trash by themselves. And, you know, now, I mean, in the future, driverless, I mean, for God's sakes, it's, you know, so I get that. I mean, that some stuff is going away, but I don't know. I think to a certain extent.
I'm thinking like long term, like hundreds of years long term here. Not like next 10, 15, 20 years. If we could have a society where all of the, say, basic needs type stuff, food, shelter, all that thing, all that kind of stuff, could be fairly automated away, would the right thing as a society be to say, and there are actually some proposals for this even shorter term, but, you know, say, hey, look, there's a minimum living standard that society will provide to everybody no matter what. And then that sort of, you know, is not going to be living in luxury, nothing like that, but it's a minimum standard.
Shelter, food, education,
healthcare, whatever, minimum standard for that. Everybody gets that automatically. And if you're happy with that,
That's fine.
You don't have to do anything. We don't want you to work. Do what you want to do. And then above and beyond that, if you want to do something for personal fulfillment or for money or for whatever, you know, God bless you. Have fun. Do it. But we're not going to make work a requirement for the basics of life.
I actually empathize. I think I agree with that. I think our society and our world for a long time. I mean, you know, we probably if we redistributed substantially, you know, a lot of the income, you know,
and I know I'm sounding
that
like
is generated.
I know I'm sounding like some sort of socialist utopia here, but I really don't.
I'm not. It's not socialism. I'm not saying everything equal. But yeah. What I'm saying is that you're a human being on a planet where we generate so much right now. That, damn it, I mean, if you're alive, for God's sakes, I'm sorry, why should you be denied food, shelter, and health care?
Yeah, because, okay? And the thing is, as time goes on, if society as a whole gets richer and richer and richer, it seems to be the excuse for not providing some sort of base minimum for everybody becomes less and less. And actually, I was going to say, this sounds very socialist. There are actually some libertarian think tanks that advocate some sort of minimum income idea, usually in exchange of saying, you know, we would rather the government provide a flat cash grant minimum income to everybody. And in exchange, you eliminate all the social welfare programs.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could. I mean, let's face it. Why couldn't you eliminate it? If you're providing that, you don't need all this other stuff.
Right. I mean, and the idea there is you get government out of the business of micromanaging all of these different programs. And then instead you say, okay, everybody in the country gets $20,000 a year.
No. Yeah, it simplifies quite a lot of stuff. Well...
And so the idea there is, even though it is, you know, ostensibly, you know, okay, this is a big government program, it's redistribution of wealth, it's all this kind of other stuff, that it would be less intrusive than existing systems where the government tries to do all of these different things and puts all of these conditions on it. I mean, people look at things like food stamps, for instance, and the kind of, you know, you can use it to buy this, but not this. And you have to fill out all this paperwork to get it and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, screw that. Just give everybody a check. Let them take care of it themselves or whatever. But, you know, and the thing is, and the way I look at it is if you move to some sort of system that had sort of that guaranteed minimum threshold that everybody got simply for being alive in society, then what's going to happen naturally over time is that minimum limit grows over time as technology improves, as the wealth of society improves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this, the only reason there are two arguments against this I see. One is, of course, just the general redistribution is bad and you're taking from the rich and giving from the poor. And what are these poor people doing to deserve it? You know, and OK, I can definitely see those arguments. But if done right, it's potentially better than what we currently do. And also, you know, if it could potentially be a relatively small percentage of, you know, the total. But the other argument is all hinged into this work ethic stuff that we were talking about before, where there's just this inherent visceral reaction against the idea of anybody not working. You know, and while you have to be, what's your job defines what you're worth, defines who you are, defines this, defines that. And I think that's fundamentally unhealthy. I think that, you know, my job is not who I am. My job is what I do in order to feed my family. and you know, pay for basic living expenses. And that,
well, I mean, it's cool if you actually enjoy your job too, but a lot of people don't get that choice. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people doing jobs that are just jobs just to get by. I mean, you know, I had a discussion regarding you know, some employees. I mean, I've got you know, for example, I've got we have 24-hour security, okay? Uh-huh. And security guards. I mean, you know, there's one guy who had two jobs, and you know, we made a decision as a board. The guy, you know, wanted some more hours here, and geez, I mean, so he's been a good employee. So I was like, well, why don't we just pay him some overtime, and you know, he can just have one job instead of having to pay to work two. You know, uh-huh. I mean, it's hard enough as it is, and the guy, you know, is I mean, but definitely, I know that, you know, his dream job during his life was not to be a security guard, but he has to do it to make a living and, you know, help his family. And I'm like, you know, it's, I mean, people sometimes just, for whatever the heck reason, I don't know why
And there's been a lot of criticism.
Don't respect that.
Yeah, you know, it's a whole bunch of, you know, graduation speeches have been built around the concept of do what you love. And Steve Jobs is quoted for this. A bunch of other people were. And one of the common criticisms is that's a luxury that only, you know, a very few people can actually achieve.
Well, but yeah, but listen, I mean, I think that criticizing that is not a good thing because I you know, look.
Well, and well, my point was actually, you know, I want more people to be able to just do what they love.
Yeah,
and you know, it is a reality of today that most people can't just, you know, make a living based on what they love. They have to make a living based on. Well, obviously their aptitude at things and what they happen to be able to get a job at, what's available in their location. There are all kinds of factors there. So it's not necessarily the best advice for everybody today because doing what you love may result in, I'm going to go be an artist. And, you know.
But at the same time, I know quite a lot of people
who love their jobs.
But the opposite, quite a lot of people that make decisions for something, maybe they have option A and option B. Option A is good enough money.
Yeah.
Option B pays 10% more, but you're more miserable. And they take B plus 10% more miserable. And I'm like, really? And I actually just was having a discussion with a friend of mine over the phone about this, where I was just like discussing that. And I just said, look, I mean, I like my current job. And honestly, I was telling her that I could probably talk to some people and get, I know a couple of other positions that probably would pay more money. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I was like, but shit, I probably would be miserable in those jobs. And I don't know. I don't think I want to make that trade off.
Well, and there was actually a chart that was published in the last week that was sort of happiness at the job versus some other metric for different college majors, and what basically talking about, you know, money versus happiness trade offs in all kinds of different majors, that trade-off is a key to all sorts of things at a high level and a low level as well. I mean, like you're talking about the 10% stuff. I mean, you know, I am not going to bitch about my job. It gives me lots of flexibility. There are wonderful things about it. But, you know, is it my, you know, if I had no monetary concerns, is it what I would be doing?
Is it your dream job? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it dream job. But like, you know, if I was suddenly a billionaire, would I continue doing what I do in my day job today? No. I've got all kinds of other
things. Actually, I had this question posed. I like my job enough that it'd say, look, I would say that question was posed. If I actually won the lottery, I would think about it twice. Yeah, I might. Yeah, I wouldn't be quitting right away.
You know, I have no plans on, my job is a great job for what it is, but if I won the lottery, I'd turn in my notice the same day.
No, I would say that if I like my job enough that if I went and I got that notice, I probably would. I may be tempted to do so, but I don't know if I would go and quit right away.
Hmm. See, I think every day about the trade-off that says, you know, I've got all of these things I would love to be spending my time on outside of work. Mm-hmm. And if I had the option of not having to work my regular job and instead spend my time on all of these other things that, you know, every week I'm like, I wish I had more time for X. I wish I had more time for Y. I wish I had more time for Z. If I could do those things instead, I would take that opportunity in a heartbeat. Mm. Now, having said that, you know, this is what it is about the trade-offs. You know, I could quit tomorrow and have lots of time for those things until I was thrown out of my house for not paying the mortgage. You know, and so...
Listen, life is all about certain trade-offs. That's the reality. Okay, all right. You know, I mean, you never get... You know, you have to make certain compromises. I mean, with everything, in a relationship, with your children, with your career. I mean, there's always certain trades that we have to do to get certain things. I think the important thing is that to all keep in mind, this is something that I was also telling somebody this week, is that there are certain things, for example, that you need to hold important and you need to do to make sure that you have your enjoyment. For example, mm-hmm. we record this podcast once a week and have been doing this for... I don't know. How long is it now?
Like 6 years or something. Yeah.
8 years.
Eight. I think, yeah, we started in 2006, I think.
Yeah, so it's 8 years now. Okay. And to us, this is a very enjoyable thing. And yeah. to me, I don't want to, this is not negotiable. I'm not stopping doing this. Okay. This is one of the things that I enjoy doing every week. So yeah. to me, it's very important. And so I make sure that, you know, that I take the time to do this. You know, and I've thought
occasionally about, well, what if my employer or a future employer or whatever ever got pissed and said, yeah, we don't want you doing that podcast thing. That would put me in a very tough spot. I would not be happy at all.
I would not be happy either.
You know, because I would probably have to pick my job, but I would not. I would be very resentful of the fact that an employer made me make that choice.
I better
now. It's never been a problem where I am.
Hasn't been a problem, and I know that people at work have listened to our podcast. Yep. Okay, all right.
At my work too, on occasion.
So yep. So I mean, you know, so I mean, I'm not concerned about that. But anyway,
some employers would be.
I would think. Yeah, I'm sure. You know. So, but anyway, all right. So, work life. It's important. You know, keep a balance. Don't, you know, make sure. I mean, I think, you know, we're talking some people like ripping on people saying to do what you love. You know, I think it's important. Look, even like, I mean, try to make sure that there are certain things in your life that are non-negotiable. I mean, if there's something that you like, whether it's music, whether it's this, whether it's that, take some time always to try to do that. OK, all right. Even if you have this job that you have to have because it's, you know, I know how tough it is to find a job, one that you like and, you know, it's mm-hmm. crummy, but whatever. But, you know. Make sure you take that time, that thing you enjoy, whether it's going out to the gym, which I actually enjoy as well. So I try to go like a few times a week, talk with my friends, meet with them, go and do stuff, whatever. I don't know. There's just auto racing like me. Like, you know, I like that. You know, I took the time to do that. I mean, it's just always, you know, try to always take the time.
Yeah, and this is, like I said, is a lesson I need to learn. I have not been good on this the last few years, and I'm intentionally going to start doing better at this because, you know, frankly, it helps you at work, too.
Yes, it does.
You know, if you take the week vacation or the 2 week vacation where you clear your head and you do other things and you do things that are fun for you, whatever, you come back with a lot more energy and ability to like focus and do what you need to at work and be effective there than if you, you know, go months and months and months with, you know, without that kind of stuff, you know, and you just burn out. And yeah. taking those breaks is vital to letting you replenish and do your job. And anyway, and just to finish off, back to my main point before we take a break and move on for a couple of other things, although we've blabbed about this for a long time.
Jesus, for a long time.
I know. But it is just whenever I hear these discussions about how we need to solve problems and move on and do things, you know, I hate it when I hear sort of as the given that the goal is for everybody to be working as much as possible. I think that is one possible end to a goal, but the goal you should really be trying to figure out how to maximize is people living happy, healthy lives. And a job can certainly be an important part of that, but it doesn't have to be. And we shouldn't sort of have this tunnel vision that says that's the only way to optimize things, because I don't think it is.
No.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back, and we probably won't. Yeah, we'll. I don't know. Well, we got a couple other things. We'll see how they go, and then we'll stop.
Yes. Something like that.
Yeah, we'll be back after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, we're back. Now, by the way, when I last took Alex away, he was really upset by that, because as far as he was concerned, he was being quiet. You know, I don't know how much you guys can hear, because I think I forgot to put the mic on. I usually have the mic on whatever it's called, the unidirectional mode. So it only gets what's directly in front of the mic. And I think somebody had switched it to omnidirectional, so you could probably hear more. But he was, you know, making all kinds of noise, playing on the floor and stuff. And whether or not you guys could hear it, you probably could hear it some. It was distracting the hell out of me. And he just wasn't getting it when I was telling him, no, that's not quiet. And so he was really upset when I took him away. But, you know, he's tired. And all of us have been sick, so whatever. Anyway, Ebola.
Ebola!
So one thing my main point last week, without reiterating the whole thing, was that I think two things are happening. One, we've been blowing it out of proportion in terms of the U.S. At the same time, there probably hasn't been enough attention on the situation in West Africa, which has a lot more potential to explode and get a lot worse before it gets better. On the U.S. side of that, there was a chart that came by on Twitter as we were in the last segment from Business Insider. Estimated U.S. deaths by cause September 30th through October 8th, 2014. So that's since the first Ebola case was diagnosed in the U.S. So one death by Ebola, 602 deaths by unintentional falling, 705 by guns.
Wait, 600, that was like...
In a week, yes.
In a week, okay.
Well, 10 days. Nine days, something around there. Unintentional fall, 602. Guns, 705. Motor vehicles, 740. The flu, 1,100.
Jesus, 1,100 by the flu?
Yes.
Wow.
Diabetes, 1,600. Lung cancer, 3,500. Heart disease, 13,000. Okay?
That in a week, that many people died of heart disease?
Yeah, in 9 days or whatever.
Nine days.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, I know. There's a guy that I worked with a long time that I went on my first business trip while I was at HP. And when I went on my first business trip, he went the, I don't know, for whatever reason, instead of taking a hotel cab, he took one of the cheapy routes. And we thought we got kidnapped. Bottom line. Okay. All right. In Mexico City. First fucking business trip I got to Mexico City. But we were not. The guy was just lost. Okay. But anyway. So he posted something on Facebook, you know, saying that how he was scared about Ebola. And I said, I'm like, dude, really? You almost get me kidnapped in Mexico City and you're worried about freaking Ebola, for God's sakes?
Look, I mean, you know, and people have said this over and over and over again, you know, in the context of the U.S., or any of the major developed Western countries, there is a lot of infrastructure in place. It's not actually that contagious. It's fairly hard to catch. Now, I've seen some things in the last couple of days of some controversy over, you know, exactly how it can spread, and maybe they're a little bit underestimating the spreadability of it, or overestimating how hard it is to catch. But still, regardless of that, it is comparatively hard to get.
Compared to like the flu,
for example,
a hell of a lot more people.
The flu kills many, many people. And this is one of those cognitive biases that we occasionally talk about. The deaths and things that happen all the time, people discount and ignore, you know? Right. A bunch of people died of heart attacks? Well, okay, that's normal. Who cares? Yet one person dies of Ebola, and it's like, oh my God, because it's scary. It's the way they die. It's unpleasant. It's ugly. It's whatever. It's exotic. People are scared of it. But you know, you gotta put these things into proper context. Now, having said that, okay.
By the way, you know, the other day I'm trying to remember. You know, somebody, you know, who had that discussion. I gotta wind up. I think I may have been at some point, maybe not completely agreeing with you on that a little bit. But I found myself the other day with somebody being stupid about a subject about deaths, and I wound up basically realizing, you know what, you know, thinking about it a little bit, you're totally right. I mean, it's like we go and like car accidents, for example. Jesus, 700 freaking people got killed in car accidents, and I'm like, really? You're worried about fucking Ebola? I mean, you should be worried about getting in your fucking car.
Right.
You know?
Now, I mean, the one caveat I will give is whenever you have sort of a contagious disease that is spreading, then you have to worry about, okay, we had one death, but you also want to worry about, well, what's the potential here for spread? But in the case of Ebola, again, in a Western country like this, where we've got a lot of things that make it so that it would be difficult for this to get completely out of control. Now, and this is where I say, but you got the flip side of that in West Africa. You don't have a lot of the infrastructure. You don't have a lot of the ability to get precautions in place and get the right things in place quickly. Now, it could. I'm not, by the way, saying it's not going to spread at all in the U.S. I think anybody who's saying that we won't have any more cases is probably out of their mind. Of course, there are going to be more, and there's going to be some spread, and it's going to happen, but it will be contained. But you've got a somewhat out of control situation in several countries in West Africa, where it is, it is not being contained right now, and the infrastructure to contain it is not in place. And that's why you have the CDC giving estimates like worst case estimates in West Africa of 1 million people dying from this thing.
Wow.
And that's a huge number. Now, even there, when you compare to other things, how many people are dying of malaria, how many people are dying of HIV, there are all kinds of other things killing people that are probably still going to be huge compared. It's still not necessarily the number one threat, but it's something that's huge and potentially containable. That's part of the frustration on this, is that it's fairly well known how to contain this, but it's not being contained.
That I think is the bigger issue why it's taken so much publicity, because this is something that, I mean, malaria is far more difficult to contain than this.
Well, people pretty much know how to stop that too.
I took the wrong example. The flu is more difficult to contain than this, for example. Okay, all right. It could be airborne transmission, so forth.
Right.
You know, it's just more difficult.
I've had a cold all freaking week.
Right.
People die of colds too, and you have.
Yep.
And even if you have huge opportunity costs of, you know, people not working and stuff too from that, obviously. But these things are go ahead.
What do you mean go ahead? You were saying.
I was just going to repeat myself and saying, you know, how, again, these other things are potentially much more devastating, but because they're much more normal, people don't pay attention to them.
Well, yeah.
Ebola gets the attention because it's the unusual thing. It's the thing that people aren't used to, even though...
Let me put it this way. I had a chart up here, all right? There was the total number of cases that we're talking about, right? Ebola?
Yeah.
It was like, I don't know, total outside of Africa of like 10?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I mean, it's retarded. I mean, everybody just take a chill pill and relax.
Well, and again, this is the double side of the coin I was saying. Take a chill pill in regard to the West, but don't ignore what's happening in Africa.
I agree. No, we definitely, and I mean, the administration had been sending a number of people in order to help with that. But it's, you know, even like, but look, if you read the story about how this guy got sick, what the hell happened and how he traveled and was sick. Okay. It shows how, I mean, it's even like to a certain extent, I mean, a lot of the problem is caused by the people there themselves. They're like, for example, oh my God, we don't want to get diagnosed with Ebola. Otherwise they'll quarantine us.
Right.
So let's not admit that we were anywhere near an Ebola. I'm like, shit, what you're doing. I mean, everybody, there is an overall, it then the hospital wards are full, and then they will take the patients that people don't want to admit that they were close to them, and so therefore they don't want to admit, so therefore they're not going to get treated. So it's a bad situation over there right now, across the board. Unfortunately, I mean, it's going to lead to a lot more people dying of it, and it's not going to be easy to control at this point.
Yeah.
But I think that we've got the resources over here to deal with. I do not think it's going to be a major health crisis in Western Europe and the United States.
No, I don't think so either. The panic is so far ahead of the actual danger in the West. In less developed countries, it's a whole different picture. You know, there are people pushing for closing borders and shutting down flights and things like that to control the spread. But from, you know, what I've seen of it, first of all, that's not necessarily going to stop it from getting to the developed countries. But what it will do almost definitively is make it harder to get help into those countries. So it's probably those kinds of measures would probably actually make the overall situation worse.
It may.
And so I think, so far, you know, no government has actually taken those kinds of steps. But there's increasing pressure to do that. I mean, I keep hearing things about, you know, closing borders, restricting all travel from certain countries, things like that, and or to certain countries as well. And that seems... this seems like panic talking rather than sort of, you know, really thinking through all the implications. It's also sort of saying, and I understand why some people think this way, but it's also saying, you know, we're going to protect ourselves no matter what and screw everybody else.
Well, yeah, but I think, look, even like, which one was the disease that... I don't know. I was traveling to Mexico and they were monitoring people for fever and whatever like 8 years ago. I don't know. That was going around. It was like, was it SARS?
SARS or the swine flu or...
Swine flu. That's the one that we're talking about. I mean, look, we've taken measures like this before when we've had like these things, monitor people when they arrive, check them for a fever, do this and do that. I mean, I don't see this as being any different to measures that were proposed. Some people, the measures that are being that are being taken any different from when we've tried to contain any outbreak of stuff like that. So... at this point, I know some people, obviously everybody proposes the crazy stuff, like shut everybody down and like we can go over there, maybe we can bomb them, who cares? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that somebody's already proposed to nuke them or something. There you go. That way the whole thing will be gone. But yes, but I think those maybe are a little bit too radical.
Yeah. Okay. Enough on Ebola. Let's take a break, and we'll talk real briefly about the economy. Back after this.
Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme, and Yvonne is at imbo. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that.
Okay. I used to play that, like, that Pet Shop Boys money song whenever you were talking about the economy during the big shutdown in 2009 or something. Maybe I should bring that back.
You should bring that back. Well, anyway, so I guess the one thing, I don't know if you've noticed, the two things have been happening recently. The dollar has been going way up. I don't know if you've noticed that people have been talking about that.
I saw some headlines, but I didn't really pay
attention. Well, one of the things, I don't know if you've noticed, have you seen your price of gas go down a lot?
I haven't noticed, I'll be honest, but okay, I'm sure it has.
Gas has been going down, okay? All right, oil prices have been going down. They've been going down a lot. Well, one of the things is oil is priced in dollars.
Yep.
Okay, all right? So when the dollar goes up, okay, we're buying the oil for, hell yes, it does, by a lot. And, you know, and there is an impact right now of what's becoming quite evident, that the U.S. is making so much more oil than they used to be.
Right.
The output increase in the last 5-6 years is the equivalent of the production of Venezuela and Mexico combined. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that the U.S. has now started to, it's exporting oil. Okay? Right? So there has been this whole thing geopolitically is going to cause significant impacts. Okay? All right? Because here's the other problem that you've got. The economies around a lot of places around the world are slowing down. And the Fed has been saying, A, it's going to raise interest rates, and B, that it's stopping pumping money in the economy. And that's causing the dollar to go up. Okay, all right? And a lot of these economies also dependent on oil money, okay, all right, to prop themselves up. Namely, a big one, the Russians. Okay, all right? Well,
okay.
I got to tell you, the slide of the one of the currencies that the dollar has been gaining the most, and almost everybody, has been the ruble. The ruble has been getting hammered, okay, just absolutely hammered, okay? And the income of Russia right now is crashing, okay? There were a couple of people right now that are saying, you know, how a lot of people are poo-pooing the sanctions on Russia. Well, they're saying, holy shit, these sanctions are having some really serious impact on the Russian economy. Enough that, I mean, the Russian Central Bank has been going out and buying, you know, trying to prop up the ruble and spending a lot of the money they've got and having no impact because so many people are taking money out of Russia at the same time. And I don't know if short term what that impact it's going to have, but I think, I mean,
well, and again, we had the conversation when we were first talking about these sanctions related to Ukraine stuff that, yeah, there were sort of two relevant questions here. One is, of course, what the economic effect on Russia will be. The second is, does it have any chance of actually changing Russian behavior? And I think our agreement at the time was that it probably wouldn't change Russian behavior, at least in the short term. But it was going to have an impact. And I think what you're saying is there's plenty
of
proof.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's plenty of proof that the impact is getting quite big. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, because the ruble has crashed. Okay. All right. I mean, it's down like 40%. Okay. And you know, you get this combination of like drying up dollars, you know, because the dollar is strengthening. I mean, that really impacts a whole bunch of people that that basically do a lot of saber rattling against the United States. Now, it benefits some countries, you know, for example, I mean, the Chinese, for example, big oil importers, and Western Europe was, you know, very concerned about this stuff. But, you know, a couple of people are saying, well, if the, you know, dollar going down, then that certainly helps. But I don't know. This just this whole thing with you've got a world economy that for Europe is still stuck. OK, they've had a banking crisis. They've had a lot of issues. You know, it's not going up. You know, China has slowed down. Russia, you know, one of the things that we're talking about today with Russia, I mean, when I went to Europe, when I went on vacation to Europe in 2011, mm-hmm. and I went to this island in the Mediterranean, went to Ibiza, and oh my God, there were so many Russians spending money. Okay, I was like, Jesus. I mean, I'd never seen that many Russians traveling in my life. Okay, and I've been to Europe many times before. And now they're saying that, dude, I mean, Russian travel is like completely dried up. And so that's an impact on the economy too. I don't know. There just seems to be a whole bunch of stuff like right now with this that it's just I'm not sure what the longer term impacts are, but it's certainly short term. It seems like a lot of people are hurting relatively quick. I don't know. I mean, but it's here's the thing that people are doing. People are scared of putting their money everywhere else. Everybody thought that when the Fed and all these people were doing with the economy that it was going to weaken the dollar. People don't want to invest. If people are scared to invest in Europe, they're scared to invest in China, they're scared to invest in the emerging markets. And despite the fact that whatever the fuck we do, they still think that the U.S. is a much safer place to invest their money. And they're right, actually. You know, so they keep pumping money over here. Keep our economy and our interest rates down. I mean, think about it. If you were out to go and invest money, and I tell you, hey, Mr. Minter, you live in an island in the middle of the Pacific, I'm going to give you all these countries to invest your money in. Okay, I'm going to sell you some Russian bonds. I'm going to sell you some Euro bonds. I'm going to sell you some Chinese yuan bonds, Argentina bonds, U.S. bonds. Which ones would you buy? If it were you, I mean, I don't know. What would you buy?
Guatemala.
Ah. I hadn't thought about that one. I mean, it's just kind of like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's just a safe haven. And I guess, you know, what I'm wondering is, there is going to be a tipping point where a couple of countries, say, for example, Iran, Venezuela is already almost, I mean, you know, I don't know when they're going to have to file. I mean, it's almost like they're going to file for bankruptcy. Venezuela, Iran, Russia. You know, this continuation of this happening is going to, at some point, cause substantial, you know, dislocation here. I'm just not sure exactly when that tipping point is. I don't know.
At the same time, we've said, you know, we were just talking a couple weeks ago about energy stuff, and you were talking about oil. You know, the long-term trend on oil has to be up because, you know, it's a non-renewable resource. There's going to be less of it over time.
Except, of course, the dynamic is demand starts crashing.
Exactly. If demand starts crashing, then that could get ahead of the other trend.
Because it's one of the things, like, I don't know if you saw this week, they're talking about energy. You know, did you see, like, they gave the Nobel Prize to the people who invented the LED lights, yep. for example. I mean, let's face it. In the next 10 years, I'm going to say that probably they're looking at cities and everywhere. They're saying that almost all these lights are going to migrate to LED, and that they burn 75% less energy than the old lighting. Right. 25% of energy in the world in the use is used by lighting. Okay, all right.
We probably 2 years ago now, every new bulb, whenever a bulb goes out, the replacement's an LED.
Yeah.
You know, and I think all the last incandescent left this house several years ago. Now we've got a few compact fluorescents holding on, but, you know, all the new ones are LED.
So,
And those things, they use less energy, they last longer, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you've got similar trends in other areas as well.
And here's one thing that somebody was talking about that I was seeing the other day. Batteries aren't improving. So what almost everybody's doing is almost every new generation of electronics burns less and less energy than previous ones.
Because they're trying to make do on similar battery. Like, battery is improving, but nowhere near the speed of everything else. It's very slow improvement.
Exactly. So we're creating new generations almost. If you buy any new appliance right now, they use less energy than before. You've got the lighting trend. You've got the solar energy trend, where there are people out there who believe that in the next 20 years, it's like, I mean, utilities in especially in the United States and developed countries all of a sudden are going to be in difficulty, because all of a sudden people are going to be able to generate electricity. And so you see these, I see these dislocations.
And need less of it to begin with.
Yes.
So the bar to generating your own is dropping, A, because the technologies to generate your own are getting cheaper, and B, because people are going to need less of that electricity in the first place.
Right.
And that's going on. And you've got the same kind of thing going on in vehicles, of course, as well.
Right.
Where you're moving to more and more efficient technologies, the electric cars, the whatever, blah, blah, blah. Now, of course, there are some arguments that you're just pushing stuff up the stack. Like, there have been various things, calculations on, like, the hybrid cars and stuff that say that, well, you're saving some environmental stuff while you're driving the car, but it actually took a hell of a lot to make those batteries in the first place. Yeah, so there are trade-offs, but that's going to improve over time, too.
But that improves over time, too. But here's the thing. Even the cars that are just gas-powered cars, they're getting more efficient. Okay, all right?
How much of this do you think is natural development, and how much is being spurred by regulations requiring it?
I think regulations have a significant factor. Okay, all right. I think they have, because I think that you've got regulations. I think that another part has been, I think consumers have been demanding the cars because the price of oil went up so much, and people don't want to pay. You know, they can't afford to keep paying what they were paying before.
Well, but I think regulations, if you remember the trend going back a little while, last time gas was cheap, everybody started stocking up on the huge SUVs.
Right.
And then gas prices spiked, and everybody was like, "Ooh, maybe that wasn't that great an idea."
Yeah, but big SUV sales are down like 75-80%. Okay, in the last like 15 years, I was looking up the numbers. So people are not buying those things anywhere nearly as much anymore. Even the manufacturers are getting more efficient for a lot of reasons. Ford, for example, just decided to replace their current pickup truck, which is the best-selling car in the United States, the Ford F-150, with a pickup truck that's completely made out of aluminum. Okay, save a whole bunch of weight. That winds up saving a whole bunch of fuel. Okay. So I just see these trends, and like everything, when it's happened before, when a big change like this happens, countries that, for example, are not investing in other stuff and are heavily dependent on just, raw materials, they're going to get hit. They're going to get hit really hard. So I don't know. I just see the stuff, it's happening. I mean, the drop in oil price that we just had right now in the last couple of months has been like in a 20 to 30% range. It's been huge, okay, in a short amount of time. A lot of people started getting freaked out, mm-hmm. by how quickly it's gone down, okay? So I mean, the impacts, some of these impacts, we may see them sooner than we thought.
Now, do you think, like, all of this stuff we're talking about, trends in the last couple months, it sounds like you're thinking that a lot of this isn't, a short-term thing that'll reverse itself in the next couple months. Do you think these are indicative of longer-term trends?
I think these are longer-term trends. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. No doubt about it. I definitely do.
And so, back to the broader economy, what's the impact of all of this that we've been talking about on the U.S. and world economy over the next, let's call it 2 years?
This is the thing. I'm not sure, because here's the thing, right? We're in a situation where you had the Fed saying that they wanted to raise interest rates, right? But here's the thing. The dollar has been going up so much. If they raise rates, it's going to cost the dollar to go up even more. Okay? Probably not what you want. Okay? All right? You're already getting, making American exports more expensive, a whole bunch of stuff. You don't want to keep piling on to that. So, I think that right now, we're in a situation where the United States has been the only economy that's consistently growing in the last 6 or 7 years. And Europe is still caught in this situation where they can't get to further growth. People are saying how China is slowing down. I think that it's very muddy waters. I'm trying to, if you asked me like 2 years ago what my outlook was, I'm like saying, oh yeah, I see growth, no problem. That's what I thought. Now we've passed these 2 years, we're in 2014, and I'm looking at the outlook and I'm like, shit, I don't know. I just don't know. The thing is that the geopolitical things that have been happening and other stuff have, like, if Europe were improving and I could see some changes quickly, then I would say, okay, but I just haven't seen anything that indicates that Europe is going to get out of this malaise that they've been over the last, few years. That's the problem that I see. So, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm saying, people, it's just you should be cautious with your thinking now.
Well, I'll tell you what, just to tie this to another thing, one of the potential topics that we didn't pick is, Bitcoin's dropped to under $300. And I think
this
matches, I'll tell you, because this is what always happens. I bought my $50 worth of Bitcoins right near the peak. And you can always tell when something's at the top when I buy it. And you can tell when it's at the bottom when I sell it.
Fuck.
Okay? So I've been thinking, it's been a long time since I bought any stock. Maybe I should buy some. If I ever pull the trigger on that, that's your guarantee that we are at the top and we're about to
God. Well, there you go. So basically, it's like the Sam financial indicator.
That's right.
Buy, sell. What he buys, sell.
Exactly. You will not go wrong with that strategy.
Interesting. And I see that Elon Musk worries that AI could delete humans along with spam. Whatever the hell that means.
Oh, that's excellent. Hey, we need to wrap it up, but one thing I just wanted to mention real quickly. Last week, I also talked about the various scandals with the Secret Service and presidential protection. While we've been talking here, the Washington Post put out a new article on that topic. And basically, the head of the Secret Service resigned last week under pressure because of all the things that came up.
Because she sucks, by the way.
Yeah, anyway, all that stuff that happened. Now, apparently, this latest leak has got to be from her, because it's about the thing that happened right before she took over. Because she took over after the previous guy resigned, because if you remember, there was a scandal with a whole bunch of Secret Service people and prostitutes in Colombia.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's now a new leak that says there was, in addition to Secret Service personnel, there was at least one administration person involved in that little escapade, and that there was administration pressure to delay the report on what was going on there till after the 2012 election because it was embarrassing.
Oh boy.
So, you know how we talked a number of times about the second term and how all of the sort of scandals and things always seem to come in the second term. Yeah, guess what? Now, I don't know if this one's going to blow up into anything, if anybody's going to pay attention to it, or if this is going to be another thing that people whatever. But
the fuck it is. It's some fucking staff or whatever at the fucking White House with hookers. I mean, who cares? I mean, if you're saying it was...
Well, no, the thing that's actually probably more significant here is the White House delaying the report.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But all of these things, here we go. Like, the second term... We've got thing after thing after thing that people are trying to make scandals out of. And one of these will probably stick. I don't know if it's this one. I don't know if it's one of the other ones. But they're all about things that happened in the first term.
Right.
Because these things percolate for several years before they actually burst into the public view.
Let's see. It says here whether the White House volunteer Jonathan Dack was involved in wrongdoing Carnahan remains unclear. Dack? Then a 25-year-old Yale University law student declined an interview, but through his attorney, he denied hiring a prostitute or bringing anyone to his hotel room. So it's some freaking... Oh, gosh. I don't know why the hell they just didn't throw him under the bus.
Yeah, because it was just some low-level volunteer.
Yeah, I would have fucking just thrown him under the bus. Well, who cares?
But apparently the report being delayed wasn't just about that guy. It was also the whole thing was delayed until after the 2012 election before, it all came out.
Mm.
But anyway, we'll see.
Well, the Secret Service sucks. I don't know. We didn't talk about this, but I forgot about this.
I talked about it last week when you weren't here. But bottom line is, yes, they've screwed up all kinds of things. And come on, guys, get it together. We don't need a dead president.
Yeah, I agree. Assholes. Fucking idiots. Jesus Christ. I mean, I don't know, but I honestly, if I expected that if somebody fucking jumped the fence at the White House, I expect that they should be shot. I don't like killing people, okay? All right? Or tasered or something, okay?
Yes. I mean, they eventually did tackle him once he was inside.
Well, he was in the East Room.
Now, and of course,
what if he had a bomb strapped to his body?
Yes. Yes.
Give me a fucking break. That's not the moment to fucking tackle him.
Yes, there were a lot of screw-ups there and a lot of other screw-ups. That's why she resigned. But from all reports, the problem isn't just her.
Yeah, she's a fucking bitch because I'm sorry. It's all the press, I'm like, whatever. Really? How about the fact that some asshole went and shot at the White House and you idiots didn't think, for some reason, even though people are telling you they did, they didn't. You let those bozos get into that stupid fucking party at the White House. And oh, by the way, you know what? You let a guy fucking jump to the fucking fence and just basically barge in all the way to the fucking East Room, for God's sakes, all right?
And the guy with the gun in the elevator with Obama.
And the guy with the gun, okay? All right? Really? Really?
Yes. Anyway, they need to get their act together.
Yes, they do.
As I said last week, because undoubtedly, with all this press about it, people who might have been like, there's no use trying anything, the security is so tight, are thinking, maybe I can get away with something.
Exactly.
So I've got to believe that in the last few weeks, they've ramped things up significantly. I hope.
I would hope.
Anyway, you may not have talked about this, but I talked about this extensively last week. So let's close it up. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. This has been another exciting Curmudgeon's Corner.
Exciting.
Yes. As usual, and I'm told via text that my son has actually calmed down now. He was upset for quite some time from being pulled away from here. But as usual, you can reach me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Or I'm on Twitter at Abelsmay. Yvonne is at I am Bo. And thank you all for listening. Tell your friends and have a great week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.